Welcome to Copyright Clearance Center's podcast series. I'm Christopher Kenealy for Velocity of Content. It's Friday, April 1st, 2022. Today, as we do each week, we check in with Publishers Weekly on news from the world of books and publishing. Andrew Albanese, PW senior writer, joins me with his reporting and editorial analysis. Welcome back to the program, Andrew.
Hey there, Chris.
So you are back home now in New York City after traveling late last week to Portland, Oregon, for the Public Library Association conference. Now, this was your first conference since the pandemic began in 2020. And I have to start there. What was it like? How was it?
Yeah, well, you know, from what I saw, it was wonderful. It was inspiring. It was, for a lot of people there, it was pretty emotional. You know, I flew in for the last 2 days of the conference, so I missed the opening of the show, but I was there for the close. And what really struck me was how many people stayed till the very end of the conference. You know, usually for the closing keynotes, a lot of the crowd has already dashed off to the airport to catch a flight home. But for this one, the audience was really there in force. The auditorium was actually pretty full to hear a speech delivered by Cal Penn, the actor from Harold and Kumar fame. He's also an author, wrote a memoir last year. And of course, he's a former White House aide. And he was terrific, by the way. He was very funny. Really hit home a lot of things, I think, that meant a lot to libraries. The sessions at PLA were outstanding. I had plenty of face-to-face meetings. And you know, even though the mask mandate had been lifted in Oregon, the conference was still mask required. And for the library community, that was, of course, not a problem. I think if there's anyone that is sensitive to personal safety and to complying with safety issues, it's the library community, which, of course, deals with these issues every day in their work. And the conference exceeded its attendance goals. It certainly exceeded its goals in hugs, and I witnessed more than a few tears when people got together. But there were a lot of people there. PLA and ALA officials had hoped to get 4,000 people to make it to Oregon. Now, that would be about half a normal PLA conference. Usually, they can draw around 8,000. But still, I thought 4,000 was a very ambitious goal. Well, they got 5,000 in person, 4,000 attendees, and another 1,000 vendors. Now, it was a pretty light exhibit hall when we're talking about the vendors, right? The major publishers were noticeably missing, or some were there, but were in a very scaled back fashion. But again, we're still coming out of the pandemic protocol, so it's not unexpected. You know, they're still trying to figure out how to get people back to their offices in New York. So again, not surprised that they weren't in Portland. And then there were another 1,000 attendees in the virtual conference, which the ALA has really gotten pretty good at pulling off. So that's in all over 6,000 attending PLA in some form. Great numbers. I think that bodes very well for the ALA annual conference, which is set for June in Washington, D.C., and I think which, given the location and the importance of the moment facing libraries, is really setting up to be a big deal.
So what do you mean by the importance of the moment facing libraries? Why is this meeting coming into D.C. this summer so important in your estimation?
That's a good question. I think really the answer comes down to a few things, but first of all, location, right? It's Washington, D.C. It's an election year. And of course, it's very much what needs to be a rebound year for libraries. So I'll get back to the politics element, put that aside for now. But DC is a place where ALA always holds its best attended conferences. In fact, as I recall, I'm pretty sure that the record attendance conference was held in DC a few years back with over 33,000 attendees. Obviously, DC is smack in the middle of the East Coast megalopolis, so it's easy for lots of people to get to. And that's good for ALA because for the first ALA annual conference since 2020, since the pandemic, you'll take all the help you can get in getting people there. And of course, in terms of the politics, what can I say? There's funding issues, there's free speech issues, there's book bans, copyright issues. So much is heating up. And this really is, in that respect, a very important moment for libraries. So it's an important moment in terms of ALA and getting their conferences back up and running. But it's also an important moment for librarians to show up en masse and to remind legislators of all that libraries and librarians have done for their communities to get us through this pandemic. So yeah, you know, funding, safety, book bans, digital equity issues, there's a ton on the agenda. All of that was on the agenda at PLA too, and I can tell you there's a lot of activity going on.
A Maryland court has ordered the state to submit any evidence available showing why a preliminary injunction barring that state's library ebook law from being enforced should not be made permanent. Now, that's a legal mouthful. I guess the question, Andrew, is this the end of the line for Maryland's ebook law?
So I guess yes and no. Yes, in terms of the ebook law, but no in terms of the issue. And I'll try to unpack that. So in terms of the law in this lawsuit, which of course was filed by the Association of American Publishers, I think this probably does represent the end of the line, right? The state of Maryland had 30 days to appeal a preliminary injunction that was issued by Judge Deborah Boardman. We spoke about it at length on the show in February, and they did not. Now, part of that is because of the way things work in Maryland. The state defended the law initially, but any appeal would actually have to be funded by someone else. And of course, the library community simply does not have the funds for that. So I think that's pretty much it. At the same time, Maryland attorneys still have a motion to dismiss that's pending, and that certainly seems like it's bound to go nowhere, given the court's position on the injunction. But in that motion, the state did reserve the right to challenge the AAP standing, for example, so that's an issue they could possibly raise. Yet, I think it's pretty obvious that the blow that Judge Boardman dealt the law was a pretty heavy setback, and my sources tell me that there is not much chance that the state of Maryland is going to continue this legal fight, especially when someone has to fund it. So in terms of the law, I think that what we're seeing is pretty much game over. The state has until April 11th to submit this new evidence. The AAP then has until April 25th to respond, if there's even a submission at all. So we're coming down to the end here, I think. But here's the thing too. Why spend the money to fight this case in court when I think it's pretty obvious, at least at this point, that the bill in Maryland is probably, almost certainly, fatally flawed? So why not just jump ahead and recast the bill? And indeed, that's exactly what is underway, I'm told. So this legal battle over the current iteration of the bill could very well become a lobbying bill, a lobbying battle, in the legislature, and not only in Maryland, but in other states as well. And, you know, who knows what those other bills might look like. And I know one iteration I'm told is under discussion would actually bar libraries from engaging in contracts that are deemed to be unfair. And that, of course, could have massive implications for some publishers. But again, here's the thing that I pointed out in the past, and I'll point it out again. And I know some publishers don't want to hear this, but they need to. At its core, this is really not a copyright issue for libraries. It is an issue of digital equity. Libraries did not advocate for this law in Maryland or in any other state because they want to attack copyright. And libraries are not giving up the fight for digital equity. The Maryland law may have overstepped into conflict with copyright, but its goal was to support libraries. And it passed unanimously in Maryland. It also passed unanimously in New York. And in Portland, at PLA, a panel on the subject had something like 500 attendees show up, and a subsequent meeting of state delegations met to strategize about how to approach their legislators in Congress about this issue going forward. So while the legal issue, the copyright question, is sort of winding down in Maryland, I'm here to tell you that the broader issue of library access to digital content is still very much alive. And it's going to be alive, I think, until publishers and libraries sit down together and solve it, which they can certainly do.
Also last week, the Association of Writers and Writing Programs held its own comeback conference in Philadelphia.
Yeah, and you could read all about that on the PW site. PW had a number of reporters at AWP. And after a 2020 conference that was significantly shrunken by the coronavirus and then a fully virtual conference last year, this year's in-person AWP was held in Philadelphia at the Pennsylvania Convention Center, March 23rd to March 26th. And by most accounts, it was a really good showing. There were a lot of strong panels. There were talks, exhibitions. And of course, as with PLA in Portland, there were a lot of reunions in the hallways. I think people were very happy to see each other in person and not on Zoom. AWP Executive Director Cynthia Sherman said this year's conference had about 6,000 in-person attendees and about 1,000 virtual ones, which of course pales in comparison to 2019, the conference in Portland, where 15,000 attended. But nevertheless, it's an encouraging rebound from the 2020 San Antonio conference, which took place right at the onset of the pandemic and drew only about 4,000 people. And Sherman told PW that the event, like our conference in Portland for PLA, was marked by an overarching feeling of positivity. So another positive sign, another sign there that we may be starting to return to some semblance of normalcy.
And looking ahead, Andrew, an in-person London Book Fair is back on the spring calendar and opens next week.
Yeah, so this will be a big one to watch too as well. And I'm very sad that I won't be there. I really was hoping that I could make it back to London this year. Alas, We'll have only our reporter Ed Nwaka, who will be there after Bologna. Ed's in London now to cover the fair there. So we will have reporting on the PW site. Alas, we will not have a show daily there this year, though we may have an online version. But you can follow the news out of London via my colleague Ed Nwaka on the PW site. And I certainly hope to see everyone back in London in 2023.
And finally, this week, Andrew, we close with news that Penguin Random House is reporting a record business year for 2021.
Yes. So global revenue at Penguin Random House was up 6% in 2021 over 2020. They hit 4 billion euros. Earnings rose 9.2%. I think they were over 755 million euros. And this all comes from a report from this week from parent company Bertelsmann. And this, of course, is without the acquisition of Simon & Schuster. And on that score, Bertelsmann limited its comment on the pending purchase of Simon & Schuster to just noting that it expects that there will be not just a trial, but a decision in the trial with the Department of Justice before the end of the year. Of course, the Department of Justice is challenging the acquisition. But in his annual letter, global Penguin Random House CEO Marcus Dole thanked employees for their passion for books, saying it helped drive record results that led to a profit margin of 18.7%. And I'm just going to pause there for a moment and pick my jaw back up off the floor because, yes, a publisher with a profit margin of 18.7%, well, that's just astounding. So, you know, I'm going to cut myself off there. You can read all about Penguin Random House's results on the PW site, including what Dole had to say about the challenges coming into focus for 2022. You know, we've talked about that on past shows, but Dole, who is, I call him the publishing industry COO, Chief Optimism Officer, Dole wrote that he is, of course, very bullish on Penguin Random House's future, on the future of books and reading. And he said that Penguin Random House is going to be doubling down on addressing consumer needs and publishing's ever-changing marketplace. So check that out on the PW site.
Andrew Albanese, PW Senior Writer, thanks for joining me on the program.
My pleasure, as always.
Coming up on the next podcast from CCC, on Tuesday next week at the 2022 London Book Fair, a panel discussion on sustainability in children's literature will feature Olatunde Gabby Williams, founding organizer of the African chapter of the UN SDG Book Club. The titles collected in the book club promote activities that encourage sustainable development across the African continent. Not for the first time, though, books and reading are also seen to be essential to changing lives for the better.
Oh, gosh, yes. Yes. And especially, you know, books chosen to represent principles of the Sustainable Development Goals. You know, I love the way, you know, the SDGs undergird the human rights. And children have to grow up knowing their rights, and the human rights undergird, you know, what we're trying to do with the SDGs to make the world a better place from the perspective of people, the planet. We want peace and the interaction between people and the planet. It's so important. And yes, it does improve lives.
Reading in Action, coming on the next CCC podcast. Our producer is Jeremy Brisky of Burst Marketing. You can subscribe to the program wherever you go for podcasts, and please do follow us on Twitter and on Facebook. I'm Christopher Keneally. Thanks for listening to this Velocity of Content podcast from CCC.